Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of We the Haunted. I am Trevor, Haunted Faith, and we also have
Lily, the one and only.
and we are
Sparkles.
back. Sparkles. Yes, we are back after a week or so of taking a break. Some mental health things got in the way for the both of us, but we are back.
Yeah.
We are back. We're getting back in the groove. It's getting groovy again. You
Getting
know,
groovy.
yeah.
We've got, let's bring that word back, groovy. I never hear
Groovy.
anybody say groovy. I'm gonna start saying groovy to everybody now. That's
Bet.
groovy, man.
It's groovy. But yeah. This is my turn to take over a episode,
It's a
and
Trevor
it is
episode.
a trap. I don't know if that's good or bad.
We're gonna find out.
But today we are going to be talking about the Conjuring House, aka the Curse of the Harrisville Farmhouse. Oddly enough, as big as it has been sensationalized by movies and ghost adventures to an extent, compared to like Port Arthur and Bobby Mackey's, there really isn't a lot of paranormal based history to report on this. It's just a bunch of criminal stuff and murders and just interesting dark facts that aren't necessarily like based on demons or ghosts. But either way, this is going to be interesting because at the end I'm going to give a little sneak peek onto my investigation there that I did a while back, which I'm still in the process of editing, but that's a whole nother thing. But
Yeah,
yeah.
this will be interesting because I don't know a lot. I only know like very little about the Conjuring House, which is so strange because I love the Conjuring movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you think I would know, knowing my history on like research and stuff? Like I always look stuff up,
Yeah.
but I actually don't know a lot. So I'm pretty excited to hear about this.
All right. Well, for the people who are new to the Conjuring House like as a whole, or new to the paranormal, I went to the Conjuring House a couple months ago and did an investigation there. And no, I did not go to the house that was in the movies. The house that they used in the movie for the Conjuring, some random ass house in LA or wherever the hell it was. I went to the house the movie was based on, the Harrisville farmhouse. And
Which they missed a huge potential, by the way.
yes.
Like the act, if you look up the house, you can just do like a quick Google search, the Conjuring House, like the real Conjuring House.
Yeah.
It is so much creepier than the house they had in the movie. It's the same thing with like the Annabelle doll. Like they missed the potential scare factor.
Yeah.
The real life thing is 10 times scarier.
Yep. Indeed it is. And also the thing is like the house in the Conjuring movie don't even look scary.
No, it don't. It just looks like this little quaint, tiny, like not tiny, it's
Yeah.
not tiny, but this little quaint house in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it just looks like a cozy little home that just was kind of like being built, like being remodeled. Like,
Yeah.
it's all, it don't even look really that scary.
It don't.
Which, like, it's okay. They're not all houses need to look scary, but like, they just missed it by like such a. They just missed the target.
And we'll talk about this later on like as well, but Bathsheba in The Conjuring, not only is Bathsheba the witch not even real in real life, but they took a fake rumor and instead of making it into a movie witch like they did in The Devil Made Me Do It, they turned it into a fucking depressed looking nun.
Yeah, that's. They did so many weird things.
Like,
We can discuss it at the end, but they did some weird movie choices with all that,
But
with the real
anyway,
lore, but that's okay.
we are going to start off with the background history of Ed and Lorraine Warren. We're gonna do a whole nother episode on them eventually, but I'm just going to give the rundown with them specifically with the house here. Ed was a World War II veteran and former police officer who became a self-professed demonologist, and Lorraine claimed to be a clairvoyant and medium that was able to communicate with the demons that Ed found or discovered. And in 1952, Ed and Lorraine founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, the oldest ghost hunting group in New England, I guess, in general. I was going to say at the time, but I guess in general.
Kind of. It's pretty old. There's a small other society that we'll have to talk about sometime.
The Keith Johnson?
Yes, I think that's the one I'm thinking about.
Give me a second. I have their name here somewhere. Shit. It's Keith and something Johnson. I have them here somewhere.
I was thinking more like, I don't know. I was thinking more like Harry Price.
I've never heard of that.
What? Okay, we'll have to talk about that later. Everybody shame him for not knowing who Harry Price is right now.
Wait.
Talk about the OG ghost hunter.
I thought the OG ghost hunter was the Hans Holzer.
It might be. I don't know. I just know that Harry Price is a big name, and I'm shocked you didn't. It's okay. We can talk about that another time.
Okay.
We're derailing.
Then they quickly gained the notoriety as respected paranormal investigators after their initial investigation of the Amityville hauntings, where the murderer, the husband, the father, he claimed he was demonically possessed in his defense for murdering them.
Yeah. And then, that was all around the same time, wasn't it?
Yep.
Ooh.
But the most popular case was portrayed in The Conjuring House when the exorcism of the witch Bathsheba. But their two most famous cases, however, were popularized by The Conjuring franchise and The Devil Made Me Do It, in the series of movies that focused on them too. It has nothing to do with The Conjuring House, but they also kept all the artifacts that they gotten from all their investigations in their basement.
Yeah, they have like a little mini, well, nobody can see it now, but they have like a little mini museum. And people used to be able to go and see it, but nobody can really go see it now. I currently don't know what the person who has it.
It's permanently closed at the time.
Yeah, it's permanently closed, but there is some, I read something the other day where they were doing something with it, like selling some stuff out of it, but I could be wrong about that. I could be wrong.
That would actually, like, you know, if Ed and Lorraine really were these bad people, then that would, like, make sense. But, like, that's another thing. Like,
let's just say they have a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
And when we get to talk about them in a little more depth, we will talk.
Yeah.
We'll talk about why they have the stigma of being really bad people, or not even necessarily, like, I don't want to say that.
Yeah.
I want to be like, another they episode. Just did some shady stuff.
Yeah.
And it could have been potentially really bad, but it does make them look really bad. And then some people are like, yeah, they are really bad. And some people are like, no, they're like, now that all those are rumors, it's perfectly fine. And it's like, It's like,
Another story for another day.
Yes.
Okay. Next, and that's all that I have at the end, the overview. Next is the land and the estate. The estate was home to 8 generations of the Arnold family and allegedly had a history of tragedies and uncommon deaths long before the parents even moved there in 1980. And the land witnessed Native American lifestyle, possibly even witnessing the rituals and energies of other Native American activities.
Ooh.
Oh,
you done said the word Native American.
Yeah.
Ooh, and this is bad.
Then Zach Bagans did an interview after their Halloween special, and in quote, he said, "What we can't argue is the fact that there was a huge curse put on the Arnold family. And then he also says, I mean, there was suicide, murder, unusual deaths, poisonings, and throats being slit. Something was plaguing the family and the land."
Ooh, see, now I would have guessed maybe just the land. But he's saying it's both the land and the family.
Yeah. Okay. There's gonna be some criminal. What my mind's the blanking. Not paranormal, but what's like the genre for just criminal stuff?
Criminal activity? I don't know what you're talking about. Showing my IQ right now.
Like what's the whole genre based on like criminal and illegal acts called? I forget. I'm blanking.
Like true crime?
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh,
Thank you. There's gonna be a lot.
didn't sound like it. There was like a technical term,
Oh no.
like criminology or something like that. I
True
was like,
crime.
true,
There
it's true crime.
is gonna be a lot of true crime in this.
Oh man, I am a true crime buff.
Okay. The beginning of the Harrisville curse. In January of 1971, the Perrin family moved into a 14-room farmhouse in Harrisville, Rhode Island, where Carolyn and Roger and their five daughters began to notice strange things happening almost immediately after they moved into the house.
Oh, that's a red flag.
It started small. Carolyn would notice the room went missing or seemed to move from place to place on its own. She would hear the sound of something scraping against the kettle in like in the kitchen when no one was even in there. She would find small piles of dirt in the center of a newly cleaned kitchen floor.
Oh.
And it wasn't until her daughters began claiming to see the spirits themselves that the Perrin family got worried. So from there, the hauntings ramped up. The heater would regularly break, forcing Roger to venture into the basement to fix it. While
Oh.
there, he would feel a cult presence lurking behind him, and the smell of something rotten would come and go throughout the house without any explanation. And at night, the beds would levitate off the floor while the daughters are trying to sleep on them.
That's not a spirit. That's a demon. That's a demon. That is a Damien. That
That is a demon. And then,
yeah, that's not good.
yeah.
Something had to happen there to let something like that in. Ooh, yeah, that's not good.
My guess is that Native American stuff is my guess.
It could, and it could be, but it could be also. So they bought the property, like they bought the house,
Yeah.
right? It could have been something that previous owners have done, and
Yeah.
it's just not on a record. Like you don't ever know.
True.
That's scary.
Yeah.
He's like,
And
yeah.
then before we hop into the Ed and stuff, Ed and what they did, demonologist brothers Keith and Carl Johnson were the first people to ever investigate the house before the Warrens, but it was never popularized until go the Ghost Adventures invited them back. That's when the Perrins then called in Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were two of New England's most well-respected paranormal investigators. The Warrens began investigating the house and its past and discovered a gruesome fact. In the 1800s, a woman by the name of Bathsheba lived in the farmhouse and was believed to be involved in death as much as
Damn,
Yackel.
do you want to go re
I did
reread that
that.
sentence?
I did that on purpose.
I was like, excuse me? What did you just say? Did you just have a stroke?
Parents are like the Warren saw that the Bathsheba had sacrificed a small child by putting. Rumor has it Bathsheba was a witch who once lived in the house, and she sacrificed a small child by taking a little pin and inserting it into the back of the skull, like on a small child, and killing him, and sacrificing it. And then that supposedly led to all the demons coming into the house, but there's no actual re the record of that happening. I like it all.
Yeah.
I have this the further in my notes. Bathsheba, the witch, is re re record show is not proven to be an actual person. The person itself, though, was, but she was just a normal girl who just moved from farm to farm and lived happily and died eventually. Like, there was nothing crazy about this said person. It just.
That's just so strange, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
How it brings in the controversy, Lord. Like they could have just pulled it, they could have seen that name. Yeah. Somebody could have seen that name and was like, oh, that's a weird name. She must have been a witch.
Yeah.
Let's just like make this story about her. Like this crazy room. Because it's the only other way I can think of that could have happened.
Yeah.
Unless like families just like passed it down of rumors. But that's just so weird. That's just so weird. That's just so weird. They kind of, and it's the same thing like with you know, Pilate's Knob and Marion.
Yeah,
it's like, where did that story come from? Because that the era that Mary died in, she didn't even die in the 1600s. I don't even think
it was 1800s. Marion,
yeah, she, well, it was early 1900s is when she died.
Oh, born in the 1800s. No.
Mm-mm.
Oh, I sorry. It's been a bit.
It's okay. It's like early 1900s, and okay, all those trials happened in the 1600s. Marion wasn't even discovered till the 1700s. So it's like a whole, like, how did that rumor even start? Like, how did that rumor start?
Maybe the mom was doing some sketchy shit, and then they just went inside of her mom's room and be like, oh, it must have been the kid instead.
It could have been like a one day thing where they were like, the mom maybe had done something, or like somebody didn't like her, or yeah, was like, you know what, I'm gonna start this rumor, like I'm just gonna make it all messed up for you. I know you just lost your daughter and blah blah blah, but like, so yeah, it had to have been something like that. So weird. But anyways, I yeah, digress.
So that night, or at the time, the Warrens held a seance one evening with Roger and Carolyn in an attempt to contact Bathsheba. Carolyn started thrashing wildly and speaking in tongues. One of the daughters, Andrea, admitted in a recent interview that she was secretly watching the seance that night and confessed that her mother wasn't just speaking in tongues, but that it was someone else's voice entirely. After the seance, Roger became worried about his wife's health and demanded the paranormal investigation to come to an end. Finally, in 1980, 9 years after the family had moved in, they managed to save up enough money to leave the house forever.
That's so weird, though.
And the seance room is the living room, and I actually did a Ouija board session in that room. I'll tell some more of that like at the end, but...
Bro. Cut the microphone, bro.
The podcast can't see it because I'll crop it out. But I bought a Ouija board from the Ouija board museum in Salem, then took it and used it at the Conjuring House.
Because you're insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just like, this is going to sound really like grotesque, but you're just raw dogging it. You're like, I'm going to bring this Ouija board from Salem, Massachusetts, not worry about any protection for myself, bring it to the Conjuring House and do my own fucking session over here with a Ouija board. No protection at all. Two of them. You're like, you know what? Fuck it.
All right. I'll give you guys a little insight because I didn't have this like in my notes, but I'll go ahead and say this part here, but I did two Ouija board sessions in the Conjuring House. One was in the seance room in the living room, and we got the word, the name Foster. Looked it up, couldn't find anything Foster related on the property, so we just ignored it. But the other one, there is a well in the basement, like Bobby Mackey's has, that is used for the disposal.
That's in a lot of really old houses. Yeah.
We went into the well room in the basement of the Conjuring House and also did another Ouija board to set the session in the well room.
Smart. Yeah.
And safe. And then also like a little tidbit here. They didn't say when, but there was a family that once lived in the house a while back, and they had a daughter that would go down into the basement and play with her brothers or whatnot. She drew a little stick figure. Like they're like this carcass of like a fridge, like just like a metal square contraption bullshit thing. And on the inside of it, there's some drawings of like that kids drew. And there is a girl that's being hung by a noose that a girl drew, like this small, like the size of my hand, a little picture on like this piece of like a contraption. And the daughter told the the parents, like what she called it, and the story carried on. But the bent neck lady also lives in the basement. That's what they called her.
Whoa, okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. You said a bent neck lady? You know what that's a you know what that
From
is
Hill
off?
House. From Hill House.
Yeah,
Yeah.
like
There's literally a metal frame, square frame of something, and inside the frame is a noose with the stick figure of a girl being hung from the noose with a broken neck. And whenever we came in there, whenever we went down into the basement, the host said, "Hey, if you look down at the metal frame, you'll see the bent neck girl."
okay. I've got like skepticism and also like believer in me right now in
Okay.
this. So that's very, it's
Just,
weird.
yeah. Just keep talking for a bit. I'll see if I have a picture of it.
Okay, so like that makes it sound like, so I don't know when the family was in there. Do you know when the
No,
family was in there?
they
So
didn't know.
I would assume it was before the show, obviously, but the book has been
I don't
around.
have it.
I don't know how long the book has been around. But that makes you wonder if there was inspiration somewhere, because that's not really a common word I have ever really heard
Yeah.
of in the spiritual world. I'm gonna see when that novel came out
Okay.
because it's very strange. Okay, 1959. So I wonder, that's very strange because that's like, I wonder if like something was said. Like it was just like, oh, one of the kids is reading this book. There's a bent neck lady in it. Or it really could be a ghost
Yeah.
or a spirit that got hung and is just represented like that because that happens too. And then they just called her the bent neck lady. That's really weird.
And you want to hear something like even crazier?
Yeah.
I don't know. This happened well beforehand, but maybe the kid. Either she read the book and got the idea from the book, or maybe the kid saw the spirit of who I'm about to talk about and drew
Oh, okay. Okay. I may. Okay.
Okay,
Go ahead.
that is all of the beginning of the Harrisville curse. Like that's when they moved out, the parents they moved out, and that's like in 1980, and hence like 20 years passing, here we are. But known deaths.
Ooh.
Husband, Edwin Arnold. Now, if you look back in the parents' records, there's going to be a lot of things that are wrong because they didn't have the accuracy like we have now.
Okay.
So they are right about who died, they are right about how they died. But on some people, the parents are not right about where they died at.
Oh,
So
okay.
Edwin Arnold, the husband, a former owner of the house, died of exposure in 1903 while he was walking home one night. He had been missing for weeks. A hunter found his dead body about a mile and a half down the road. The records say that he fell asleep, he never came back because it was cold.
Fell asleep.
Yeah, he was walking home. He was walking home and taking a shortcut from wherever he was coming from. And he sat down to apparently take a nap, and apparently like it was so cold or so hot, either or, that while he was asleep, his body went into shock or something, never woke up. A hunter found his body there.
Okay, that sounds so fishy.
Yeah.
Like, does it not? That sounds
Yeah.
really fishy. That sounds really weird.
And then also, whenever I was at the Conjuring House, the owners told us this, but I couldn't find the name of who. All right, this next person I marked it as a friend, but there was a guy that died named Jarvis Smith,
Jarvis.
and he died from exposure as well. And that's all I have on him. Not where,
Just
not
died
when,
of exposure.
but
Okay.
whenever I was at the Conjuring House, the family who owns the house now, who is trying to sell the house, they said that there was a guy that was trying to get drunk in the barn out in front of the house by the road, but whenever he went to drink, he mistook it for he mistook a toxic chemical for alcohol, and he died from exposure just by laying like on the ground. My guess is that that's Jarvis Smith, but I have no proof.
Oh, shit.
So there's that. And then here's where either the girl either read the book and was like, oh, bitneck lady's in this book, or maybe this girl later on in life saw the spirit of whom I'm about to talk about, and she drew her on this metal piece of
Is
paper.
okay, and what family is this?
The Arnold family.
The Arnold family?
Yes, before the parents.
Okay.
Wife, Susan Arnold, dated 1866. Her husband was coming upstairs and noticed that the storeroom, which I would assume is the storage room, like it was locked. So he went in through a window on the other side and found his wife hanging from a small cord.
Oh, shit.
It also says that she also had a loaded gun, a dirk knife, and a vial of mercury in the room as well in case it didn't work.
Oh, my God.
So what if this little girl was in the house years later, living in the house, and she was young enough to see like other things that we can't see? And she went upstairs one day, saw the spirit, and then went down one day, got bored and wanted to draw something cool and went, oh, I remember this shit, and just drew the bitneck
Well,
lady.
yeah, like she's like, I'm assuming really young, right? Like a
The
child. Is there?
girl who drew the picture, I have no idea how old she is.
I'm going to assume that she's a child because
Yeah.
normally preteens and stuff like that don't go randomly drawing stuff like that
Yeah.
unless it's really traumatizing. Like I work with a lot of kids, so but I kids don't normally draw, especially something like that,
Yeah.
and saying that they don't know the concept of death quite yet, or like the concept of like what a hanging looks like. So that would make sense for this child to call this person, they think it's a person, the bitneck lady, because they don't know how any other way to describe them, and then drawing a picture of them is another way of trying to describe it. Because they don't fully know how
Yeah.
to describe things yet.
Yep.
Holy
Yep.
crap.
Yep.
That's kind of weird. That's like, I can see both ways though. And I don't know when they were there or anything. But that, yeah, that's, I can see it both ways, but I almost see it more of the her seeing the spirit way.
Yeah, same.
I lean more towards that because that would make more sense, especially if they were very young.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say is, I don't think I'd like that.
And then Edmund Arnold, the husband, his son, John Arnold, died by suicide, but not in the farmhouse, even though parents said it did. He died at his home near a town called Tarklin. This location is several miles southeast of the farmhouse. He allegedly died from taking a toxic substance called Paris Green. That's all that I have on him. That's it. And then I have two more. One is Bathsheba the witch. We all know that shit. I'm not going to talk about her again.
She needs justice.
Okay. This is, you would think nowadays if someone got a story this fucking wrong, there would be outroar. But this next story is how it was originally written is fucked up, but it's still fucked up nonetheless.
Okay.
Prudence Arnold, an orphan, adopted parent. I assume her parents were the Arnolds. I have no idea. I'm sure there was a lot of Arnolds in the area at the time. But adopted parents both died by the time she was three. Well,
Oh.
the adopted parents did. So she was then taken in by a person by the name of Anann Richardson when she was And then this is where it gets fucked up.
Uh-oh.
I'm not gonna
Any
say,
warnings? Any warnings?
I'm not gonna say a trigger warning because one of the things that allegedly happened did not apparently happen. So just mentally, like, just know it did not happen. More than likely, did not happen. But
Okay.
when she was 11, William Knowlton was 22, and at that time, marrying at that age was normal. But he was jealous that this 11-year-old girl promised to marry him, and then months later, she didn't want to anymore, and he was
Yeah, because
jealous.
she's 11.
Yeah, and
That's
he was jealous. So
oh.
he followed her up to the second floor of her home, which at the time was not the farmhouse. She was adopted again. He followed her up to the second floor of her home and caught her, and then slit her throat with a straight razor. Slit her throat with a straight razor.
Holy shit.
And then he was then caught and taken to jail. Other records show,
Okay.
this is other records that is false. Other records show that supposedly and falsely, before she got killed, he raped her.
No. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah. More than likely did not happen. Multiple records, multiple research papers show it did not happen. It was just the murder. And
So it's factual that he did murder her?
yes, but it was also said that he did something else before he murdered her, but that was not true.
Okay.
And then it also says after he killed her, he supposedly killed himself with the straight razor. But turns
Oh.
out the straight razor was too dull at the time. So it was just a self-inflicted wound that he lived through, and he got caught. It was
You know
then
what? Good. I'm glad he got caught.
found that he killed her out of jealousy when she refused to marry him. And it is said that her spirit returned home to the farmhouse after she was killed. I tried to look up evidence. No one has said, "Hey, I found the evidence of prudence," but supposedly her spirit went back to the farmhouse.
Supposedly.
Supposedly.
But that's so sad.
Yeah.
Like, this nasty fucking grown up murders this young child out of jealousy. She's 11. She doesn't.
Yeah.
That pisses me off.
Yeah.
That pisses me off. I'm glad he didn't get to take his own life because I hate when that happens. And I like to read a lot of murder cases and listen to other true crime podcasts and things like that. And I hate it when the murderer, the killer, kills themselves because that's their justice. That's like the last fuck you to everybody else. And it pisses me off.
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate it to the max because they deserve to go and live out through their punishment.
Yeah. But yeah, like that's all I have, not in general, but on the past and the deaths, just like overall, like, oh, and one thing I would like to say is on the Conjuring House, there is a giant brick wall behind the house that separates one land from another. The brick wall is the whole wall, of course, I guess this is a big part too. The whole wall is filled with dead bodies and unmarked graves of Civil War people. Soldiers. Yeah.
Okay. that
So
that
not only is there Native American stuff that took place at one time there, not only is there unmarked Civil War soldiers engraved in the wall, stone wall on the property, but also everything else that happened on the property as well.
murder. So unmarked, basically, Civil War
Yeah.
graves, Native American. That, I mean, we don't know what happened on that land with them because white people's history is not too great.
Yeah.
That,
Yeah.
that's just calling for one of the worst, one of them, not the worst thing, but like a lot of bad shit can happen and there will never be an explanation for it because of all that bad energy just getting stuffed in there together.
Yeah.
That
and you take and can you take care and teach care of kids, right?
Yes, I do.
Then this next part will be even weirder for you.
Cool, thanks. Thank you very much.
While living in the house, apparently from 1987 to 2019, Norma Sutcliffe operated a daycare inside of the house for 20 years.
What the? Sorry. That, no, why would you do that? Okay, yeah. I'm all for repurposing buildings, that's fine. But with all the stigma around that, that is like me going to teach my class in the Emeryville house.
Yeah.
Or the Waverly Hill Sanatorium. Like, no! Yeah, no. Those poor kids.
Yeah, I got this from the same site the site I got it from was called The Skeptical Inquirer, where they like they correct a lot of old things, like the records in the past. And at the end, it says, like, not only did people like buy it and like do some renovations, but apparently Norma Sutcliffe, the owner before the current ones, she operated a daycare inside of it for 20 years.
Holy shit.
So maybe that's when the kids drew the bent-neck lady on it.
Oh, shit.
I could be wrong, but what if?
What if? Ooh, what the heck? No!
Imagine all these kids for 20 years just kept on seeing the same old lady like hanging herself in this. Whatever.
As a kid that got traumatized with all like seeing ghosts and shit, I feel so bad. Yeah. I feel so bad for those kids. Oh. Because it's either you grow into it like I did, or you stay terrified and traumatized by it.
Yep.
And, oh my gosh, that's awful.
And then,
that's so bad.
And then in early 2019, I think it was June, Corey and Jennifer Heinzen, I met them at the Conjuring House. They're the ones that told us all the general history. They didn't tell us everything because obviously they didn't want to like waste half of our time. Yeah. But yeah. I met them. They are awesome individuals. The husband gives like Austin vibes, not gonna lie.
No, if anybody doesn't know, Austin is my husband and yeah. He is just
yeah.
Lovely. I love him so much.
Corey, the husband there, he'd be like giving the history he even said like he was talking about the guy who died from exposure in the barn and mm-hmm. I know half of his name. I know how he died, when he died. I have no idea why he decided to do it. No idea. So he said long story short, yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got for y'all.
Yeah, it was hilarious, but yeah.
Not a spokesperson, so yeah.
Yeah. And they have two amazing dogs that live in the house too. They're so cute.
Aww.
But and while they're in the house, they built a huge apartment space. They built onto the house a huge apartment space for merchandise and a TV and bed. So when people come and do the ghost hunts, they don't have to leave and they come back. They have a soundproof room that you can't even hear them in.
Oh, okay, cool.
So yeah. And then they became the newest owners of the house, and regularly whenever they moved in, they heard footsteps, voices seemingly coming from nowhere. They have even communicated with entities through a spirit box. Excuse me if you heard that.
on camera.
Yes.
On audio.
coming from nowhere, they've even communicated through a spirit box, to which they have received clear, even communicated with, they've heard clear, audible responses. I'm getting ahead of myself. And this is eerily similar to the way the hauntings began for the Perrin family, whose time in the house later became one of the most famous paranormal events of all time. And then this, I can only find this next piece of evidence and record through Ghost Adventures articles only. if it's somewhere else, they didn't go into depth, but I have a theory.
Okay, I'm ready. I love theories. This is the whole point.
I've still yet to capture it on my evidence that I'm looking through, but Ghost Adventures captured it at least once or twice. But one of the main pieces of evidence and entities in the Conjuring House is just a dark black mass that floats around.
Okay.
And I have here. They have even been sightings of a dark mass that resides there and was even captured on Ghost Adventures. Could this dark mass be residual energy from Native American history, or is there something more recent in demonic? And I have a theory.
Okay, I'm ready for it.
Like, it's a stretch, but I have a theory. What if the what was her name? The mom. Curse. What if Susan Arnold, the girl who hung herself?
Okay. Yeah.
Then her spirit that it is there, that died there. It died neutral or mad, but it wasn't like a demonic looking entity. I'm sure whenever she died sad. But what if whenever that kid may or may not have saw her and then drew the bent-neck lady and created that hysteria, what if between the thoughts and the energies of other people hearing about the story combined with the dark energy of the suicide, combined with the energy the kid put out whenever she created that bent-neck lady drawing, like in the moment, what if all that energy got absorbed into a demon that was looking for energy and had the perfect cover-up to show itself? So it already had a confined, guaranteed space to move around in. The spirit it was controlling lived there for God knows how many years. And kids.
And kids. And children. The only thing I have about that theory is that demons don't normally get created. They're normally attracted.
Okay,
fair enough. Already there. But it could still be in the form of attraction. Because normally when a lot of negative things are in a space and there's no kind of way to expel it, that is what demons feed off of. They feed off of negativity, any kind of form in any kind of way. So all that built up pit energy can open that doorway for them.
What if, you know, and kind of I'm going to do like a movie type of reference here, just to get like the idea like into your mind. You know, in Insidious, the movie?
Yeah, I do that.
You know how the demon would actually grab a hold of the kid and move him around and shit?
Yeah.
What if a demon got a hold of the spirit of a kid or Susan and was just controlling her? But the spirit of Susan was so weak that the only entity we saw whenever they manifested was the demon itself.
Yeah, there's been some theories that are like that before that I've heard of at certain cases, like smaller cases.
Yeah.
That's a possibility because, you know, demons technically are weak entities.
Yeah.
And they need assistance. It wouldn't be shocking to me if that, and that, of course, that is a stretch. It's like a huge stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll never know. But that could, and that makes it even sadder because that means I don't even know what it is keeping those poor spirits there, these people, their souls there, controlling them, trying to bring in more energy, because that's what demons feed off of. They feed off of energy, especially negative energy, fear, you know, things like that. That makes it even sadder because they're holding those souls into this, in this field, in this place, and it's manipulating them like a puppet, which is a possibility that I could see that. I really can. That makes it really sad. And of course, I've never been there. I can't put my own thoughts into it, because I have never personally been there. Otherwise, I would really be able to feed into it. I will have to go one day and see. That is on the list. But that, yeah, I can see.
Or maybe a demon came up from the well.
It's a demon well. It's a well demon.
It's a demon, yeah.
Fair. It's a demon named Damien.
Case closed. Case closed.
We love Damien the demon. He just likes to fuck shit up. It's fine.
Merch coming soon to Damien the demon.
Oh, I would love that. That's our new friend, Damien the demon. He comes from the well.
If we ever hear
something. Like, hi guys. Hi guys.
But yeah, that's all I have on the history of the Conjuring House. The Arnolds, the Nundes, the Perrins, the Ed Warrens, them.
them.
Bathsheba, or what is there of Bathsheba, the land, the estate. I guess I will end off with my investigation. I will tease it a bit. I'm not going to talk about it much. I'll just note off some things that I did. I was upstairs in the children's bedroom, and I was doing a spirit box session, and then I remember asking something to a spirit, and my spirit, then like in my speaker itself, just turned off, not anyone touching it.
They're like, you know what? Nah.
Yeah. <I'm> dead. At the end, this is where you'll think I'm insane again.
I already do, but I am also insane, as I have been quoted before, so it's fine.
In the library where most of the shit happened.
Okay.
I mirror scryed.
Did you have assistance?
Yeah, I had plenty of assistance.
Okay.
But
I was like, did you just go out there and be like, you know what? I'm going to try this. Oh my God.
I was mirror scrying. Okay. And then about 2 minutes into it, it looked like I grew a large beard like a Civil War soldier would. And then my body just got drained. I fell to the ground.
Ooh, do you think maybe a Civil War?
Maybe. Maybe.
Soldier came through? Sorry.
Are you fine? Then the two Ouija board sessions in the house, basement, and living room, the seance room.
Don't want to give too much about that.
Yeah. And then I heard and captured the audio, but then witnessed after the fact active poltergeist again in the library where a globe got unhinged.
Yeah. I remember you telling me about that.
Yep. And then I found this on my evidence too. I haven't told you about this yet. But Liv, yes. The host, she was in the center of the library while we were all like a half circle around her. And behind her was the two doors that you entered the library with. Mm-hmm. And then I was doing some scrying on the mirror. And they said, no, we heard some creaking. And then we turned around. Nobody moved at that point for a minute. And then they said, no, a door opened without us touching it. And then I turned around to look at it. Mm-hmm. And then right as I turned around, my camera caught a light anomaly float up and away beside her.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, dude.
Yeah. And then I'll say that there is more, but I'm not going to tell it here.
Oh, guys. Excited.
Yes.
Excited for that video.
It'll be done eventually.
There's a lot of stuff going on right now. So
yeah.
I mean, be patient with us. We're really trying.
Long story short, without getting you guys down, two people that have been on my channel here for years, you guys know that about 2 years ago now, I went through a large depression spell. And a depression spell is happening again, but it's nowhere near as bad. And we skipped a week of filming because of it. Lily's going through her own thing, and I'm going through my own thing, and I'm fighting through it, getting through
you
it.
You have the depression. I have the anxiety. Yes. Mixed together. We got
the
whole freaking show. It's great.
Yeah, just
it's fine.
I'm not going to mention anything that specifically happened with me because this is the internet. But everything that happened with me happened in a way to where it was easy for me to move past a lot of it relatively fast. So that's all I'll say. But we're getting back into it. We're getting going, and we're good now.
we're getting back into the groove, guys. Yes. I've got a lot of stuff for us. We're going to sing about it. You're like, yeah, shut up now.
I'm just bobbing my head and going, I'm making it groovy.
Oh, you're making it groovy. Right on, man.
Right on. Peace, love, and happiness, brother.
Brother. My brothers and sisters.
Let's all come together as one and worship this tree together.
I do that now. What are you talking about? Fair enough. I'm just want to say, guys, like, if you've stuck around this long, you know, we have a growing audience right now, and I'm very appreciative of every single one of you. Like, I look at, like, how many listens we get every single day. I look at how many people subscribe to us and, like, our reviews and everything. And I just want to say thank you.
Yes.
Like, really, like, I didn't even think we would get as many as we got now, which we are still a very small, not like a super small number, but it's still, like, amazing that people want to listen to us. So I just would, guys, real quick.
Yes, thank you for everything. And it's like the feeling whenever I started my channel back in 2015-ish, like, I was excited whenever I got 7 subs and 2 views. And then a month passed, I had 100 subs and 10 views. And then I'm like, this couldn't get better. Now I'm at 1,500 and 80 views. I'm like,
hey. He's like, hey.
So, like,
look at that, yeah, people.
I'm literally going through the same thing. It's like, this is a new endeavor, a new project that's going to be going on for quite a while, a new fan base. Eventually, when we get bigger, we're going to start our own channel for the podcast itself. Just the only reason we're not now, and I know I don't like to talk about this to the audience because it sounds like I'm overconfident, but just to let you guys know, the only reason we're not now is because of numbers.
We want to get out there. We want to get more to y'all. We want to be able to tell our stories and review places and give our theories, and we wanted to reach to so many people that if we already have a place to do that already and already get a jump start ahead of it, then why wouldn't you?
So, like, we're going to be posting audio only platforms is the same, but we're going to keep posting the podcast to my Haunted Faith channel for the meantime. But eventually, when our audience gets bigger and we get enough people that is willing to follow us to anywhere, a bigger audience that'll just, like, move no matter where, then we'll create a whole other channel specifically for the podcast. But at this moment in time, if we're honest, it just wouldn't be smart.
Yes. But I just wanted to take a little small time to thank everybody for listening to us. It's been it's like the happiest time of my day when I can go in and see that more people, like, listen or, like, subscribe and everything like that. It makes me really excited. Makes me really happy.
It's awesome.
But yeah, that's is that all you got, sir?
That's all I got. That is all I have for the Conjuring House or the Harris.
It was insane.
Yes.
Like, I didn't know about the murders. I didn't know about any of the previous families that have lived in the house. That I didn't know there was a daycare in it. Like, what the fuck? No, like, I understand. I understand being able to repurpose. You buy a place and you see potential in it, but man, who?
Yeah.
That would be like, that's like, let's just make it a try. Let's just try it out. Ooh, man.
It's like, it's like, out of everything that we could put in this house for 20 years straight, let's make it kids.
Right? Kids.
Kids.
That'll work.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I have. It's all that we have. Thank you for watching. Once again, you've been an amazing audience, and you continue to be an amazing audience. This has been The Conjuring House, a.k.a. The Curse of the Harrisville Farmhouse. I have been Trevor, Haunted Faith, and we also have
Lily, the one and only Sparkles Glitter.
Groovy
Groovy, man.
Talk soon.
Bye, guys.